You want to know what was it like when Ion showed up the first day? Well, having talked to the Evergreens for 24 years, they were so good, that was the best for me, right? So I never thought the Evergreens could be bested. Nothing could outdo the Evergreens. So Ion says that I really missed the Evergreens when they stopped in 2004, and I don't recall really missing them. Every now and then I'd say, be interesting to find out, but I didn't have a yearning for anything to come. I was happy with what I'd learned from the Evergreens. So when JW started to see ghosts and accidentally step into parallel worlds, that was interesting. But then when Dr. Beter came through, this is the Evergreens. So I thought it was the Evergreens. So when we tried to speak on March 18, 2009, I didn't have any questions. I said, well, if these are Evergreens, it'll be interesting, but I had nothing pressing me. So Ion spoke first. Ion started talking and immediately said crazy stuff. I didn't know what, talking about the desk in the White House. The desk in the White House and the other one in Buckingham Palace. I'd never heard of those things. And so when we finished that first time, JW wanted to do it again. I didn't have any desire to continue. I don't remember saying, well, let's do it more. But JW wanted to. So I did it for JW at first. He wanted to keep talking or have this experience. And for me, the first week or so was kind of boring. I was happy that McLuhan came through in the first session, or something, calling himself McLuhan. I don't want to say I know what it was, but McLuhan certainly knew, the ghost McLuhan certainly knew about his daughter Mary. So I remember, I don't know if it was in the first session or the second session, I said, well, I've got to come up with something. So I said, okay, let's start with the old one, who killed Kennedy?
9/11.
Yeah. No, we didn't get to 9/11. I just said, who killed Kennedy? Because I had talked to Evergreens in detail, which you can hear on the Bob Fest last November 2013. You can hear a lot of what I learned from the Evergreens through the years. That's all on the recording. So go to ionandbob.blogspot.com and find out how I didn't kill Kennedy. I thought I did, but it turned out there were a few other people that enhanced Kennedy's suicide. So Ion started saying these very obscure things about Kennedy. Basically, Kennedy killed himself. What? What do you mean Kennedy killed himself? So somewheres in there, in the next couple of weeks, somehow I realized that, well, this is different. This is not your normal medium talk. And I don't remember really getting intrigued until he started saying I was Moses. That I was the new Moses. I said, what are you talking about? So all the time in the first few weeks, I couldn't figure out whether it was JW making all this crazy stuff up,
And who are you really? What have you learned about you, like your Moses and...
Oh, since then?
Yeah.
I would say now that Ion, there's the archetypal, mythical reservoir of knowledge, of our history, of our culture, depending on what nation or race you're from. So everybody is a Moses, or has that in them. And so Ion he says, you're Moses. Now, I haven't resolved whether that would be said to everybody eventually if they had a long talk with Ion, many hours like I did. Or in the world of mortar and social agreed upon, like we agree we're in Berlin. I'm not in Hawaii right now. I'm in Berlin, you're in Berlin, seems to be the same place. On the social universal consensus reality, Ion seemed to be saying, no, Bob, you have a role as Moses in that world for others to notice. So I already had a pretty inflated image of myself. So even yeah, I kept it to myself, unless I was on the radio and I just jokingly brag about it. But I'd been told, I was told stuff in 1971 by Bertie Catchings. Told I'd be a spiritual gift to the masses. Now, this is crazy. You know, I did not require to be told this, but these things were told. That was in Austin, Texas, 1971. And, you know, the Church of the Subgenius comes out of Austin, Texas. Ivan Stang and his first wife went to the University of Texas in Austin. Now, they may have, he's born in 1953. He probably went to university at the age of 18 in Austin. And I was there in the summer of 71. And I go to see Bertie Catchings, and she tells me I have a spiritual gift to the masses. Right when Stang is going to be inspired by whatever it is, those early movies he made. I don't know if he had these ideas in high school, but I think he got them, he made some movies in university. So it's interesting that I'm there in Austin, Texas, being told I have a spiritual gift to the masses. You are the J.R. Bob Dobbs, says Bertie Catchings.
How do you understand the spirituality? Because it's
yeah, sort what of the heck different. Is that? I told my friend Barry Ellis back then, and he said, "Forget that, Bob. Get that out of your mind. You don't want to be a spiritual gift to the masses." And I agreed with him, so I ignored it. But see, here's the other thing. The only reason and you asked me about my love life. The only reason I could even think that I could be someday a spiritual gift to the masses is because I was with Carolyn. And Carolyn obviously was a spiritual gift to the masses, right? I mean, I don't think like Sue Bone, Sky Goddess Sue remembers Carolyn around when Sue was around us. And this, I met Sue right after this, in August 71. I met her right after being in Austin, Texas, at Pinot Canoe Club. And she says back then that Carolyn was quiet. To her, Carolyn was quiet. But I think Carolyn was more, she wasn't quiet to me. She was observant, and probably Sue tended to talk, so Carolyn would let Sue talk. So from Sue's point of view, Carolyn was quiet, right? So, but as Carolyn got into medicine and started being unique, always lucky, whenever any issue came up, a problem, it always goes to her favor. The students at the medical school in Dalhousie didn't want her in the school. They said, she's too idealistic. She actually wants to be a doctor. That's nuts. So the dean of, well, Nicholson was maybe his name, Dean Nicholson, the head of the medical school for entrance, for people getting in, he liked Carolyn. So he made sure she got in, that went around that. So always the doors open. Always open for her, every stage, and she always stood up. So if anybody, so I was guilty by association. If I was going to be a spiritual gift, it's only because of my being associated with Carol. So,
then,
and you know, that is after we got married in 1970. So this is after we got married. So what were we going to say?
Yeah, and after all these years with Ion and having finally the E-cell and the
I-cell, the D-cell,
Coldplay and all these things are no longer fantasies, right? Or projects, they're
real. Now in 71, here's what's interesting. Bertie Catchings, that was a psychic in Austin, Texas, told me that I would be with Frank and Gail, and I knew Frank Zappa, and we were going to go see Frank Zappa. That would be the session, the reading with Bertie was in May 71. There's the dates. May 71, probably May 22nd, you know, or May 14th, Walter Bowart's birthday. One of those dates, probably. So we go down to Mexico, over to Baja, California, and up to Los Angeles. So we are in Los Angeles in June, and Jim Morrison dies in July, I think, of the Doors. And so that's when we stayed with Joe Dunn Sloan and really got to look at the D-cell. So here are spiritual gifts to the masses, and within a 3 or 4 weeks, I'm in Joe's home in Huntington Park looking at the D-cell in the microscope. You see? See, it all fits. Now, we didn't know how important it was, but we knew the D-cell was pretty effective because we'd been taking it for 2 years. And so we spent 6 weeks at Jodan Sloan. And in the middle there, in end of June, 1st of July, we went up to Palo Alto where Dave Wurster was. And I met this woman named Nan. And there were these people who were working with Dave Wurster, who was doing a seminar in education. And then while there, I went up and saw Don Van Vliet, or Captain Beefheart, in the redwood trees called Ben Lomond in the summer. So I got to sit and play with Don Van Vliet. And so here I was making all these important connections right after that session with Bertie Catchings. I mean, I met Beefheart before, but here I was getting more involved with these people, with Jodan Sloan, with Captain Beefheart. We went to Hawaii. We took a short trip to Hawaii to see what it was like, and only stayed there 3 or 4 days. And I was not attracted to it. It wasn't a place to be for me. You know, I didn't miss leaving it. I didn't want to stay there. It probably just seemed too isolated. So then we went back to. Then we went up to Seattle. So I had some good information with Dave Wurster up in Seattle in August 71. And then we went, I think we took the bus across Canada. And when we got back to Nova Scotia in Dartmouth, the day we got back, the day after the day, August 14th, August 15th, huge flood in Dartmouth. The whole town got flooded. Just like on this trip, every country's in civil war, disasters, plane crashes. You know, every time I don't fly that often. And I'm going to fly to London. Plane crash. Everybody has to be sacrificed. There's always plane crashes every time I get on the plane. Just before.
But maybe it's important to say, what is death then? It's not what we think.
The odd way to look at it, that it's not connected to me. But we know it's connected to me, so what is the reason? What is that within that assumption? They ain't going to kill me, so but somebody's got to go. It's like a sacrifice. It's an Aztec Mexican sacrifice. That's what
yes.
It is. It's some kind of sacrifice. And then it turns out we caused the plane crash for other reasons which will remain unspoken for now, right? We won't go into those details. That's just too much. Too early in the interview to do that. But also earthquakes happened. And we had an earthquake in China.
Volcanoes.
And then in 1976, this really struck me because I'm talking about 1971. Then 5 years later, I'm in LA with Dave Wurster again, and that's when the huge earthquake happened in China. 250,000 people dead, supposedly, 250,000. And that's when I started to realize whenever I got together with Dave Wurster, there'd be earthquakes. That was in 1976, but it started in 71 in Dartmouth, where they flooded the city, the town. Now, it turned out that day, August 15th, 1971, was the day that Nixon took the dollar, what do they call it, the fixed exchange rate, became floating. The dollar began to float. It's like the virtual economy took over. And it happened on that day, August 15th. The floodgates were opened, and there's a good case that Nixon was watergated by the Rockefellers for taking the dollar off the fixed exchange rate and making it flow around the world, and then all the countries lost control of the economy. That happened the day we arrived back in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. We'd finished our journey. Bob tore 71, or really Connie tore 71, whichever way you want to take it, right? Then we went to Bertie Catchings and then Mexico. So here we are talking about Mexico, 42, 43 years later, you know, 42 is a magic number. And to a supposed Mexican yourself is hearing this testimony of me arriving in Mexico, and then up to Los Angeles, then Hawaii, then to Palo Alto, then Hawaii, then Seattle. And I remember Dave Wurster had these little books that Paul Shockley had made, his Aquarian gospel. He was the other medium for cosmic awareness. He hadn't really started publicly yet. So I had these nice little booklets that Dave gave me, that Paul Shockley gave me, wrote, and there were Bo Kitzelman's book, E-Therapy. Bo Kitzelman is the one who got L. Ron Hubbard into the E-meter, because L. Ron Hubbard attended Bo Kitzelman's lectures in Pyramid Lake, Nevada, I think, near Reno, Nevada. And that's in the 40s, late 40s. So here I had this little booklet, E-Therapy by Bo Kitzelman. Very interesting little booklet. So I got that. I got some important little artifacts in 71, August 71. It has to be the first week, right around probably August 8th, which is JW's birthday. So JW is 6 years old when this is happening. He's only six. And so we're there on August 8th, 1971, and then we took the trip back to Dartmouth by bus. We might have flown part of it. Remember looking up Randy House in Montreal, and Randy, he is in my diaries. You can read about Randy, which I got to show you, that you haven't seen the diaries. So he had moved to Montreal, and what I remember about him is that he read Darwin's Origin of Species. So he was just starting in college, and he was really impressed with Darwin. Now, I never was interested in Darwin, I would never read The Origin of Species, just seemed odd. Well, I was just listening to William Irwin Thompson's lecture from the late 70s, giving the history of Darwin and the people around him and how he was promoted. And the real guy was Alfred Lord Wallace or something, or Alfred Wallace Russell. And what a sort of fraud Darwin was, as William Irwin Thompson lays it out. Really recommend these new recordings that are available. So I was thinking back to Randy and his, now he calls himself Ron House. He's a doctor in Toronto. Ron, is he still infatuated with Darwin? What would he think of William Irwin Thompson talking about Darwin? But see, I have a good memory for all the conversations I've had, all the people, I even know the dates. So I'm thinking 40 years later about Randy telling me that he loved Darwin. And I'm saying, you got to read McLuhan, you know? I don't think you ever read McLuhan. So now my mission is to get Randy interested in the RNA drops and REMAG. Will he respond to that? He's very scientific, you know, rigid left hemisphere person. So to affect Ron, that's an unfinished project. Been going on for 42 years. So let's see. So we're talking, why am I talking? We're talking about what it was like with Ion. Oh yeah, spiritual gift to the masses. So when Ion started to talk about me as Moses, at first I didn't know whether he meant it literally or symbolically or what. And
was a joke.
Yeah, just the joke. But Ion did not seem to be a joke at that point. He was not being flippant. He wasn't doing his rants. It was very serious talk for the first few weeks or first month. The real laughter, I think, is when Steve came from Dartmouth, my old friend from Dartmouth, and he stayed with us in end of April, so that's a month after Ion showed up. And on April 22nd, that's an important date, always been an important date, I got him to listen to Ion, and Ion went on for hours. And Ion started joking. Now, I think, you know, Angela, Chad's girlfriend, she has the theory that Ion, when they meet a new person, they absorb the personality. So Steve always had a pretty good sense of humor. We always laughed a lot. So there's Steve and I talking to Ion, and Ion starts really laughing it up and making jokes. He might have been getting that from Steve, you know what I mean? Steve evoked mm-hmm. this humorous part. And we were just, and I, you can hear that on the Dupes and Non-Physical. You can hear the recording of me and Steve just laughing with Ion. So that was interesting. I'm telling you how I perceived it subjectively, how my little reality, you know, little God-like reality. Oh, Steve comes, joke caused by Steve, you know, Ion starts joking. So what else? So
did you had any doubts at any time?
Yeah, in the first couple of weeks, JW wasn't a ranter, but JW had a lot to say. he had a lot of opinions and could talk a lot. So I kept thinking, and J.W., he was a member of a church, a Christian church, so he knew the Bible. So I kept thinking, well, this is just J.W. wants to talk about the Bible, you know? It's his own background. And I didn't know till a year or two later that J.W. had the same thing told him when he was a boy. When he was like 12 years old, they said, you will be a spiritual gift to the masses. He was told that when he was 12 years old by I think it was a diamond merchant or someone who was very big in the diamond world, but was the advisor to it or something. And actually, I shouldn't say too much about this. This is JW's personal story, but I think I've said this on the radio before. So JW, turns out JW and I had very similar effects. We have similar personality, similar sense of humor, similar inflated megalomania, been told we're spiritual gifts to the back. You know? And now what was I saying about that? But so I'm thinking, this is JW, but I'd only think that for, you know, half a day, because then I would have another session with Ion the next day, and it would be totally different to all this new stuff. And after a while, I said, JW doesn't know all that. How can he know this, you know?
And yeah, Ion knows things that
nobody knows, and it's
nobody knows. And at the time, for example, in my case, I could not even understood what he was talking about. And then when I got it, it was like,
it was right, and how did he know? Right. So, you know, within a month or so, I started to diminish my doubt and start to say, this is real. Then I had to deal with, oh, this is pretty amazing. What are we going to do with this? Now, Carolyn was doubtful or not interested, but Carolyn's always not interested. She's always just doing what she does, and she's like Remedios. She's not sad. If Remedios Varo was sad, Carolyn's not sad, very happy and following her bliss, you know, and doing what she wants to do. But nobody influences her, nobody, any other ideas, she doesn't take in. She might hear it, she might be able to explain it to someone, say, what does Bob mean by the tetrad? And she'd, well, this is a tetrad. And she'd give a crummy, semi-accurate interpretation, you know, be vague. But she said, well, you have to, this is all I know, you'd have to ask Bob about that, the details. But it's something about, there's four laws, and something gets extended, something gets obsolete. So very casual, very indifferent. So she was like that, I think, for a long time. She participated every day, pretended she was interested.
She was typing.
Typing. That's her big... That's how she keeps from being bored, right? She just types. So, for a long time... Oh, yeah. So she did not agree with Ion's talking about raw sewage and medicine. And she didn't like what he was saying about medicine.
Many things he says are real shocking. And they won't really understand, for example, the fact that there is no death.
Right. You don't, now Ion, looking at us, they're looking at us from the guff. They're in a state of bliss. If you're in a state of bliss, even eating looks stupid. They're watching humans, right? And eating, or using our senses, he's not saying it's bad, but it looks not important. It's like if you're on your peyote or something, you're in a state of bliss and everything's pulsing. So this is how Ion sees experiences reality, right? And we look like we're running around frantically, and we don't have to because we're ignoring the bliss. So I understand the feeling place that Ion's from. It's not even, it's way bigger than feeling, but everything looks rather not an issue. Eat what you want to eat. If you're blissed out, you can eat anything, right? So Ion is speaking from the astral plane's feeling place.
And did he ever told you why did he came to you?
Well, each, and it's been 5.5 years, almost 5.5 years. He's always peeled back the layers. Probably the first reason he claimed he came here, I brought him, is I missed the evergreens, which I didn't really miss the evergreens in my feeling place, right? I didn't really miss them. It was I had done so much with the Evergreens, so many hours, what was it, 64 hours, $500 an hour, that I'd satisfied my curiosity that that source could give you. So I didn't know that I missed them. Now maybe I did, on the level myself I didn't have access to. So then later, it turns out I set up the Illuminati 800 years ago to have this come forth, right? So gradually, and then I was Santa Claus, and I have gone through eternity bringing gifts to cultures and starting new civilizations. This is normal. I do this all the time. So Ion always had a new, ridiculous, exaggerated statement to add to the original statement. Well, Bob, you missed the Evergreens. Well, no, Bob, you didn't really miss the Evergreens. You're Santa Claus. You want to start a new reality. So he keeps, it even gets more crazy. And what would be the latest? Somewhere in there, I realized that he was talking, that it didn't apply to anybody else. I was only Moses in my own mind. Or he told me it was in my mind. I was only Santa Claus. Yeah, I never thought of myself as Santa Claus, but he told me that's what I was. So after a couple of years, I'm oscillating between, oh, this Ion would say this to anybody. If Ion could talk to you for 5,000 hours, eventually you'd be Moses, you'd be Remedios Varo, you'd be Leonora Leona Carrington, you'd be Santa Claus. You'd become everybody. That's one way to look at this, right? I'm only getting because I've had so many hours with Ion. And then the other part is, none of this really was understandable until the RNA drops came. Then we had a substance that was a breakthrough, a miracle, the eye cell that became, we found out later it's the eye cell. And that obviously affects people, makes people happy. Even when we used to get on Cashflow and I would just talk to the people, with James Martinez show, everybody would feel so happy with Ion. That was where I realized this is something beyond my fantasy. This was real, you know. This because it is affecting people. They were feeling happy just listening to Ion, and then they have a private session and they'd get blissed out from that. So Ion became very real when I started, when we got on the radio and it started to affect other people. Then I started to say, well, maybe it's true what Ion's saying to me. So, and then when we got the drops and we had the results from that, it's been really good for validating all the first couple of years of nonsense that Ion was telling me. You know, absolute ridiculous stuff, you know. Now I think I'm pretty ascended now. I understand it. You know, maybe it's because I'm on the drops, right? On the remag, it makes you think you understand it. So it's not so crazy now at all.
And what is like to be ascended? What is your perception is different?
Oh, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. then Ion tells me, well, Bob, JW, what's interesting is what's happening to JW, right? That was interesting, getting JW's opinion. So it took him a while. He didn't even know what was going on. He couldn't stop. He stopped smoking. He stopped drinking wine and coffee, every alcohol, anything. He's a totally different person. But it was about a year, probably once we got on the radio, he says to me one day, "Geez, Bob, everybody's going to be able to feel as good as you." So he said that I felt good and everybody would start to feel good. So Ion always said that I always felt good. I always was pretty ascended or blissed out or something, and had no clue that I was. You know, I didn't know that other people were feeling anxious or pain. I didn't feel it very much, the other people's pain. So now I don't know if I feel better. I'm probably more happy that, so if part of being ascended is happy that your success, the success of the drops and what we're doing in the cold fusion, which we call cold play, that's pretty validating or exciting. So I would say to be ascended is to be happy and to know why you're happy, or to have the proof of it, the proof of what you're doing. That's what makes you extra happy. Whereas before I was just happy, but probably thought it was because I was hanging out with Carolyn, you know.
And you said humans limit their, in the way they see themselves, they're too human in how they see those. So
they don't feel bliss. It's important that when you're hungry to solve your hunger, and when you're tired to sleep, when you're horny to screw. You know, all these things are important. That's being too human. Now, Ion doesn't say physicality is wrong, limiting, but people are too much in the physical and miss the bliss, which is physical, but it seems to come regardless of what you're doing. Doesn't matter where you are, alone, together, whatever, if you feel that relatively secure, confident, validated bliss, that's what's important. That is something you can never, once you start to have it, usually can't give it up. It doesn't go away. So all the physical stuff doesn't is not as important, even though you might do more of it. You might, I mean, many, many Ionettes on the drops masturbate a lot more than they did. Right? They are so horny all the time. Just for the record, you should see Martina. You winked. But so they do more of the physical, even though they're indifferent to it.
But your hormones are working.
Yeah, your hormones are working. Yeah.
It's healthy.
Yeah. And so that's the paradox, is that you get more involved, you eat more variety, you don't care what you eat anything, enjoy anything. All this physical activity takes place because you're not dependent on it. You're not dependent on it.
I had some experiences that validate this coming into your power. Like you say something and that happens, or sometimes I want to buy something and I put my hand in my pocket and I have the amount I need, the exact amount.
That amount comes out? Wow.
And I'm like, oh.
Wow.
And it's funny because it's the exact amount, or once my car was not working, I needed a metro ticket. Mm-hmm. And I look in the floor and I have a ticket there in front of me. And this type of things is like, wow.
Yeah. So you didn't have any money in your pocket. Then you put your hand in, there's money there?
Yeah, and the exact amount.
Wow.
And that happened several times. Like, I just feel like eating something in the street and I'm like,
yep, that's it. Yeah, that's people have reported that. Not exactly the way you're saying it, but they have gotten money.
How is it for you to be in your power?
I always say anytime Ion shows up, you guys have money show up, food show up, or some little convenience.
Or
I get Ion.
Bob showing up.
Yeah, Bob showing up. But with for me, the biggest anomaly is Ion. So that's the biggest ongoing miracle for me, is having Ion to speak, and Ion doing things with us, like sending the brownies or whatever magical thing happens, so that I don't have many frustrations.
Actually manifesting these things that seem to be so science fiction, when I try to explain to other people, they look at me like,
can't be,
yes. Because it's beyond our fiction.
It's beyond Harry Potter. It's beyond all the fantasies that the children are taught in their culture. It's close to it, but you actually, when it's happening, it's way beyond what you expect. You don't expect it to be that good or that incomprehensible, right?
Yeah, and it's amazing to witness this, and it's like the Gulf is empty, it's there, Coldplay is there, it's not a fiction anymore. And it's like a very important moment for humanity.
Way beyond the Mayan calendar, way beyond any cultural, they predicted it, but they never predicted how it would be and what would happen, how extreme it would be for people once they tapped into it.
So that's power.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Ion tells me I'm Moses in the early first year. He then, 2 or 3 years, well, maybe 2 years ago, it might even be, I played it on, maybe back in 2010, He said, Bob, you're the smartest person on the planet. That's when he wasn't telling Carolyn she was the smartest person, you know. We'd go back and forth. I'm not knowledgeable in the particulars, but probably evoking ion, having ion, makes you the smartest person, right? Because you have instant access to everything and can make anything. Like to come up with the Coldplay, the actual box. I like to say battery, but Ion says it's not a battery, Bob. It's a box. And the power coming out of it, you know, I've seen it, been with it, and it's so huge, the power, that they're going to say, where did this come from? Well, Bob and Carolyn made it, but we didn't have to do much. We just evoked Ion, and then Ion told us how to do it. Now, the greatest invention is Ion. You know what I mean? The evoking by me, Carolyn, J.W., of Ion, that is the biggest invention. That's way more than Coldplay or RNA drops or any of the future stuff that's coming. So I have no problem saying I'm the greatest inventor. I invented Ion. Top that. Okay, let's see if you get Mr. Einstein, Mr. Richard Feynman, Mr. Terence McKenna, Mr. Who's out there? Stephen Hawking. Your whole team at CERN, top this, you know? So that's why I think Ion says you're the smartest person in the world. Other times I will say, you know, Bob, you don't know where you are. You don't remember anything. The only reason I remember dates is that's the way I triangulate, Ion says. You're not particularly original, Bob. You haven't had an original thought. It's like this Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine kind of guy. And then Ion says, you have no clue what we're talking about, but if anybody on cash flow asks you to explain something, you explain it better than we do, Bob. So it's like I go into a kind of trance and just start channeling whatever I put together. So I claim it's the effect of being in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, the darting mouth. This is a darting mouth, mm-hmm. Right? Darts all over the place. So
I think everybody's impressed of the velocity.
Speed?
The speed in which you can just go and flow and say, and it's like no reflection, you just...
Right. It's kind of conscious channeling, what people call trance, but it's conscious. I'm not aware of any trance. Carolyn seems to be like that. Ask her any meta question, she just has the answer. And I've seen her, she doesn't do much with drugs, never, you know, advises them. But when you ask her about a strange drug, something I never heard of, she knows immediately the drug. She taps into her memory and it comes out. So it's like memory, very good memory, that is evoked by whatever the environment says. So if you say something to me, like right now, what was your question? in the beginning? What was it like at first? So here we are, half hour later, explaining all. We went to Austin, Texas, 1971, went to Hawaii, e-therapy, all over the place to answer this question. But it all just is there if you ask the question, this history. It's almost like I know the history. So more and more I understand the neutrino. We are already lived it. When you ask me a question, you're pressing
We're going... Back to the future, you said something like
that? We're not going anywhere. We're just allowing more and more to be
retrieved.
Expressed. You could not even retrieve, because that means it was from the past.
Oh.
Yeah, see? breakthrough. And see the guy with the fan over there? See the room? The fan?
No.
No, right opposite us. Oh, like right there. The colored fan.